I'm Andrea Marie Tita, and this is the Main Character Podcast, a lifestyle podcast about getting better, growing, going deeper, and taking control of your life. You are the main character of your story. You can pivot and make a change at any time. This podcast will encourage you to ask yourself the tough questions and reflect. My hope is to connect with not only the guests that are on the podcast, but also so many of you that choose to spend your time listening. I want this podcast to always be a space for vulnerability, connection, and deep conversations. Empowering you to choose yourself always. This is the Main Character Podcast. Hello, and welcome back to the next episode of Main Character with me, your host, Andrea Marie Tita. Today, I am joined by Annalie Howling, who is an elite performance coach, a trauma therapist and specialist, the author of the new book, Unapologetic, and she has a large social media following and presence inspiring thousands of people every single day to know their worth and own their power. I am honored to be chatting with you today, Annalie. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, I'm so excited. If we could start and kick off with a little bit about you and your story, where you're from and based, and then we can take it from there.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'm 43. I'm a single mother, divorced. I am doing all the things that you mentioned that I'm doing in my work. I had a massive burnout in my corporate career at 29, which was me chasing all the things that we had a little chat about off air that I thought I should, in inverted commas, and that I believed made me successful, which was the house in the right postcode and the Range Rover on the drive and, you know, the job that sounded good at dinner parties. And fuck me, I'm glad I've got to stop doing dinner parties, you know, all of this sort of bullshit. And yet my body eventually went, good God, woman, no, this is not what you're meant to be doing. And handed my ass back to me, in all honesty, if anyone's ever had any kind of burnout. And then through the sort of inevitability of my broken pieces and having to sort of slow down and look at each part and be really honest, the thing that was the most out of alignment was my job, which at the time was working big corporate London in the construction industry, which was horribly toxically male. This is way before Me Too. I also had to unpick a lot of childhood trauma. I had a very violent childhood, and I realized that the job and all the as we in Britain would say, the bells and whistles, so all the bits that came with it, were me trying to outrun my trauma by making myself safe, financially safe, and or feel worthy through external things. I see you nodding. And then when I kind of went through all of this, I was like, fuck, well, what am I supposed to do? Because you hear all these stories of people that like, transform their lives. You go, well, that's amazing because I'm really unhappy and I think I'm burnt out actually. And what she's saying sounds exactly like me. But the issue is you're not handed a golden envelope as like a reward for finally stopping. And everyone goes, here you go. Inside this is your purpose and you're going to love it and be successful and happy forever. You just know that you can't do what you were doing anymore. And so then begins the journey of, well, what the hell am I meant to be doing? And so for me, that was hauling myself off to the West Coast, to San Francisco, to the home of coaching, for anyone who's ever done any coaching. Yeah. And because I am a type A, undertaking everything that I could possibly do to the highest level. But in doing so, also unpicking a lot of my stuff, shall we say, my armor, masks that I've been wearing. And I think I went there thinking I'll get a qualification. And actually I came back, sure, with a bit of paper saying that, but I came back really being able to hold my own vulnerability. And that was something I hadn't been able to do before. So that's kind of my backstory. And yeah, right now we speak in February and at my house just outside of London. And I am launching my book in May, which I'm unbelievably excited about and nervous about and kind of a little bit tired, wired. So all of those kind feelings. It's so new for me. This is such a new space, which I love learning. And I'm feeling the real pull of my own like inner critic a lot at the minute, being like, oh, this is too hard. Why bother? You know, look at those people who are so much more experienced than you, or you'll never get there. Why do you bother trying? Which inner critic is like, I think for most people, the big tell that A, I'm a bit worn out, which I will be for the next few months. And also this is me leveling up. And your inner critic is the loudest when you are on the precipice of making a big change. And I tell you what, and I'm happy to be super honest about this, it is a lot for me right now to stay in this game. Like, I want to step off all the time at the moment. It's just like, you know, I want to lie under a blanket in the corner and someone wakes me up in 3 months' time. Like, that is how I feel. So yeah, there you go. That's kind of a little bit of background about who I am, what I've done, and where you find me.
I love that. And honestly, I'm already going to go off on the outline because you made me think of so many things. I feel that with podcasting all the time. I'm like, should I just not post on social media, like not post any of these guest episodes, like, you know, my solo episodes, like who's listening? You know, like we all have those inner critics. Once you're like, I had a friend say to me, like, you're in the arena. Like, so you're an author, you know, so once you get into this new space that you've never been in before, it's like terrifying, but exhilarating at the same time. And one thing that I wanted to ask you, as you were saying all of that, and thank you for sharing that so vulnerably. Do you feel free? Like, as you were sharing all that, I was like, she must feel so free, like to get to the other side and just be able to be who you are.
So yes, I do. Yes and no. Yes and. That's a coaching thing that you say. Yes and. Yes and.
Yeah.
So like, so the truth is yes, and there's an and, which is the, like I said, this sort of the push right now. I don't feel free because I'm in a process of, it's really commercial. You know, you say write a book and there's me thinking, I'm going to be like Colin Firth in Love Actually by a lake, typing, there's going to be fresh flowers and it's going to be like an outpouring of like beautiful prose and like everyone's going to applaud me. And, you know, like, yeah, that was what I imagined a writer's life to be. No, is the answer. So it's like the writing bit actually was, I really enjoyed it. And I will come on to what makes me feel free because it's all linked into this. The commercial push is what reminds me of what I was doing before I went into burnout. And I'm doing it in an industry that I've never done it in before, in publishing. And I'm having to like beg, steal and borrow favors, people. Like we just chatted, I'm coming to Nashville for the first time, which I'm really excited about in April. I'm filming some shows, I'm doing some things. But at the moment I don't feel free from that maybe, but that's also like I say, I'm leveling up. But do I feel free in myself? My God, yeah. Totally. And that is because I no longer have any shame. Like I call myself a shame-free vessel. There is no shame within me whatsoever. Like you very kindly emailed me a set of questions and I said, and I hope you didn't find it rude. I said, look, I hope you don't mind, but I'm not going to read the questions because I want to know that I'm answering you completely authentically rather than trying to remember something I've scripted, because I don't think that's in service of me. And I don't think it's in service of your audience or our connection. I want us to connect and have a real conversation. And the reason I don't need to read it, I have no shame, babe. You ask me anything, like you go anywhere, I'm going to tell you the answer. If it's something that I can't, which by the way, would just be for legal reasons, not because
for sure.
I wouldn't, that'll be me and you over a margarita when I come to Nashville, I'll be telling you everything. I'll let you know that. But there is something so freeing about being able to move through shame. And I don't say this like in a glib way. I had so much shame. The trauma from my childhood, feeling bad. I used to self-harm. I'm a therapist who used to self-harm, like talk about shameful, my failing marriage. Like there was so many things that if you'd done this with me 5 years ago, I would have been like putting my nails in my palm, wishing you didn't, like we stayed away from certain subjects, or there'd be a monologue going in the back of my head being like, either trying to tell me to be perfect or willing you not to say something, that is shame. So I have no shame, quite literally. I am shameless, which is incredibly freeing. I was talking to someone the other week about it and I was saying, the reason I know that and the reason it feels free is I never think about it. I don't think, oh, I better... I'm wearing a sweatshirt right now that I've been wearing all day. My kid's been on a play date. We've been around a park. Like, you know, I'm not thinking, oh, what will people think? What will people think that you're not wearing a... And tomorrow I might go out in a pair of knee-high Louboutins and I don't care either way, you know? So it's like that to me is probably a bit of a glib example again, but it's freedom. I'm not thinking about that anymore. And I used to think about it all the damn time.
I love that. And I'm in leggings and sneakers right now, too. And like, it's just how I felt this morning. I was like, I want to be comfy. I'm like, obviously going to put some effort in, but I was like, I'm just going to go and be me, you know? Yeah. And I love that you said that, because it's like, and you've inspired me with everything that you just said, because I can tell I've been in therapy for a few years, and like, I definitely still have moments, and like, I have work to do with shame. But years ago, like, I failed the bar when I first took it, and I never would have talked about it. And now, like, I'll post it on social media, I'll share the story, like, I'll tell people, like, I can fail, and like, you can get through tough times. And by the way, you'll probably come out a better person on the other side, you know? And it's just like those examples, like, we have all this built up shame, and it's like so important to work through it. So you've inspired me. I'm definitely not where you are, but I'm trying to get closer.
Yeah. I mean, the high priestess Brené Brown is absolutely right. And when you, as soon as you name it, even in any small way, and maybe we'll get into what's in the book in a while, but it literally cannot hold on to you. You know, shame thrives in making you feel alone and unworthy and broken, and it can only control you like that. So if you start talking about things like failing the bar, it doesn't affect what I think of you or where you are now or any of those things. If anything, it makes me think, oh, great, you and I can have a really honest conversation about some stuff, about I can learn from you about resiliency or what that was like for you, or gosh, my heart hurts for you that you would have felt that you had to hide that. Actually, maybe you couldn't ask for help at the time that you most needed it. Like, my heart hurts for that version of you, you know? So that in itself has made our connection much deeper already. But shame wants us to perform and like be perfect in this. And the whole time it's there whispering, it's like deceitful, slimy control into your ear, just telling you that you'll never be enough, that you aren't enough, and that you have to hide and perform instead. And it's just such a lie. So as someone on the other side of tons of shameful things, I would love to encourage anyone to, you know, don't necessarily have to drink the Kool-Aid like I have, but you know, crack open a tiny bit and just practice saying something out loud to someone you love.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and since we're on that topic too, if there are people listening, the first step, you know, and I know, like, obviously this is not, you know, professional advice, but you're just, you know, we're giving our thoughts here today. So I just like to disclaim that. But if you were in your experience, if there's someone listening, like, what are some of like the baby steps they could start to take? Is it journaling? Is it saying to, like you said, a loved one that you trust? Like, how can they start getting themselves help and digging deeper?
So thank you for disclaiming that. I'm going to trigger warning this right now. I'm going to talk about sexual assault. So for anybody listening that doesn't want to or is unable to listen to this, I would skip it. In my book, I refused and had a few, shall we say, interesting conversations with the publishers. I would not write a how-to book because I do not believe in putting like, here's five steps to overcoming shame. It's not true. And I won't tell anyone that it's true. And you could do five steps and tap your head three times and do a piece of breath work. All of those things help control and calm your system. That is not how you get rid of shame. The way you get rid of shame is by exposing it. But that has to be done for you in your own way, safely. The sexual assault I'm going to talk about, I treat people that have been victims of sexual assault and violence most weeks and weeks out. I have heard things that are so wicked, like the wickedest things you could imagine. And yet there is someone in my book that wanted to go in with their real name. They're only not allowed because some of the people involved in the story are still alive. Good old legal, I see you nodding. So, but the story's in there. The story is in there. I mean, so raw, so vulnerable. And at the end of the story, she was assaulted by a teacher when she was 10 years old, sexually assaulted. Is this person is also gay? And then everyone says, oh, do you think that's what made you gay? Which is just a whole nother layer of, I mean, shame and insanity. The person's caregiver, parent, knew all about it, never spoke about it. And then I won't go into exactly what's in there, but then it was never, ever, ever spoken about, but then would continue a behavior to humiliate them further afterwards that was, I mean, beyond shocking. And this story is in the book. And at the end of the story, she says what you can do. And she's like, the first step is admitting it out loud to yourself. That's all you have to do. Stand in front of a mirror and you can just say, this happened and I didn't deserve it. It wasn't my fault. And so if that is the first step, that is, and then she also said, find some forums. And, you know, there, don't you use your name, but you can look on forums. There are a lot of forums. There are a lot of good places for advice. But the first step is being able to just admit and be with and open up to yourself that that is something that's there. And that is something that we need to, we as in ourselves, work through and give compassion to. Now, there is a cure for shame, which is great news. The cure for shame is self-compassion. So this is an exercise, like I say, the beginning of the, let's say the thing out loud, even if it's to ourselves, like in our car, anywhere, completely private. And then let's just be with the fact that we didn't deserve it. And we can then go from there.
That's powerful. And like, I just made me think of a couple of different things and all the work that I've even done. I don't know if I've ever thought of it that way. Like to actually, you know, say that to yourself, like I didn't deserve this, you know?
I didn't deserve it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And thank you for sharing. And I know that's not easy to talk through or write about or hear. And
the book is horrific to read. Like, I mean, this is me not selling it, but I my book is a really difficult read. Like it's about me clawing at my face and self-harming. There are stories of somebody that had a lifelong binge eating disorder on the back of their father making very sexual comments about them and their body in front of his friends when they were 12, and then learning to hide within her body in either way, and food becoming her only friend. And then there are expert interviews with, I've got a bariatric surgeon talking about the shame and where it comes from and how old people are when they're shamed about their body. Fertility experts, how the patriarchy and the shame around it and why all of it lives with us, even the relationship between patient and doctor. There is so many structures that I have gone into with either my own story, divorce. My own divorce lawyer is in my book. My divorce lawyer. Yeah, I don't think that's ever been done before. So
no.
I've like, if you like, put myself in there. And the other thing I've done to try and kind of not prove my point, but really try to give a sliver of courage to someone that is suffering with shame. I have waived my own anonymity and my own files and my own therapists are in the book. From the time that I was self-harming. So I've, with my therapist, she's in there talking herself and my own, if you like, my file was from therapy when I was self-harming and her notes that she made are in there because I don't want anyone that's maybe thinking in some way about getting help, whether it's professional, talking out loud to yourself, talking to a trusted friend, whatever it may be, I don't want people to be put off. So that's why I've put that in. Like I say, I'm not being flippant when I'm like, oh, look at me, I'm shame-free and unapologetic. I am. But I know what it took to get here. And if I can put some things in that, you know, generally speaking, are really private, I don't mind. Like, if this helps one other person, if someone reads that file and goes, oh, my God, that's me. And if that's me, that means there's hope. And if there's hope, that means that I can do something about this. And guess what? Shame's already lost its grip. Already. Because you know you're not alone.
Yeah. Oh, that was powerful because I thought of a couple of things as you were saying that. But I had a moment in therapy. This was actually last week. And I won't say the full story. We can talk about it over that margarita. But I had been working through like childhood and you know, why I react certain ways and all of this. And, you know, I'd been in therapy for several years. So what you touched on and saying, like, it takes all this work, like, for you to get to the point that you were able to write this and tell your story and have your therapy notes in a book and be able to, it took you years of work and going through the hard days. And so I'll share this, like, after years of having days that I didn't know, like, what to do and, you know, what to make of these feelings that we all feel on a daily basis. I had this moment finally, and I couldn't have predicted it would have happened in that session. I was sobbing with my therapist that I feel so safe with. And I had so much gratitude for my childhood and acceptance of it. And if I didn't have, you know, if I wasn't that little kid that was confused about X, Y, and Z, like, I wouldn't be me, you know? So I think I'm hearing in your voice too, like, going through the hard days and going through the years of work and really going deep within, it's worth it, because to get to the other side and that level of hope and that level of wanting to help other people, because exactly what you said about writing the book is why I started the podcast. I say, if one person listens to this episode and it helps them, I'm happy that I told that, you know? So yeah, it really made me think of that. So thank you for sharing that too.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's something, again, it's an invitation to people that maybe are feeling the same way, feeling on the edge of something perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. And then I wanted to ask too, I know you said the book will be a hard read. I did pre-order it, and you guys can pre-order it. We'll put the link in. But I know it'll be a difficult read, but who would you say the book is? I know it's, you know, a lot of different people, but if you were to say, like, this person should pick it up or this person should pick it up, like, who is it for?
I think it's for anyone that is resonating with what we're talking about, that feels that in some way they're maybe either completely lost, like you're looking around the world and other people seem to be happy with it, and you're kind of like, this doesn't fit for me, or like there has to be more than this, you know, like this doesn't quite make sense, and or you feel like you're not making sense to yourself, like this shame is coming up that you're performing in your relationship, like there is a sex and pleasure huge element on that, because guess what, get the shame bell out, that's one of the most like shameful areas for women in particular, but you know, it's a huge block to intimacy and connection for both of us. I would like it for anybody that feels probably loss, whether that's a relationship, a heartbreak, grief, there's a lot on grief in there as well, burnout, you know, continuing down a path and feeling like you're not getting results. I really did write a book that is sort of an amalgamation of all of my own work, my clients, my own healing, and I wrote something that I needed in the moments I was in the most pain. And so that's who it's for. If you are in any kind of pain, this will give you, I mean, it's maybe can't wrap its arm around you, but you will feel so seen. I mean, this is a movement. This book is at the very end of the book. Everyone get it in hard copy, because at the very end of the book, this is an exclusive for you, you sign something. So the book is called Unapologetic. And at the end of the book, there is an opportunity to give away your last apology. And it's to yourself. Sorry, not sorry. I offer my last apology here to myself, because this is the last time I say sorry for, you know, being too much. It's the last time I say sorry because you circling my nipple left 3 times didn't make me come and I feel broken. Or it's the last time I say sorry for, you know, being myself. This is the last time. This is the last time that I believe in any way, shape or form that I am not enough, just as I am. And this is where, and the shame, and maybe from some things that you're thinking about, a version of ourselves that we want to, that we apologized for at that time. This is an opportunity to, it's like a, you know, I've done so many courses and I kind of wanted to put something in whereby it's almost like a certificate that we can collectively pass out and be like, yeah, that's it. That's it. I'm done. No more. No more.
I love that. And it's like knowing that we're enough. I think it's every moment of every day we're working on this, but just knowing we're enough right now, like not when we, you know, I'm single. So like not when I meet my person, you know, like, of course, that'll be beautiful to add to that. But like, not when you meet someone, not when you get the dream job, not when you lose 10 pounds, you know, like you're enough now. And it's like, I think remembering that and being able to take up space, which you've been inspiring me to do as well. Like, it's funny to have to notice the people that kind of shift their energy around you once you start taking up that space. And I'd imagine that you've faced some of that in your endeavors. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, definitely. That's a huge bit of the book as well. I call it the cuckoo complex. I don't know if you have the cuckoo bird, but the cuckoo bird in the UK it never makes its own nests. It steals another bird's. Cuckoo is one that wants what you have, but isn't prepared to do it. So like, I'm sure you might get this. Oh, how did you do this? How did you grow overnight? And they think that I've just like pulled a magical hashtag out of my vagina and gone, oh, just type this in. It'll get you 300,000 followers. Like just like that. Oh, I did nothing. I just like paid this company to do it. That's what people think. And you're like, you don't want to know the answer because the answer's really boring. It's showing up every day. It's doing the same thing. It's adapting. It's moving. Sometimes some things do unbelievably well. Sometimes some things do average. Sometimes some things bomb. But I show up every day and I keep doing it and I keep kind of pushing on and adapting. You don't want to hear that because it's not sexy. But yeah, then you get these people that have this like sense of entitlement that they want to have what you have, but they're not prepared to do it. And so the cuckoo that will steal your nest or try. And then, you know, and that includes friends, that includes, you know, all manner of different things. And then there are absolutely, as you say, people that as you seem to prefer you when you're small or only seem to want to support you in discomfort, and you think, well, this is great. I've got a great piece of news to share with them. I've found the love of my life. I've got a book deal. Oh my God, the friends that I lost over like something like that. You know, like it's incredible. The people that were surrounding me, almost swarming me when, say, I was like really in a difficult place or going through the end of my marriage and everything like that, like seemingly couldn't get enough of me there. And then now as I rise and, you know, I'm not saying that in like a, oh, look at me, aren't I brilliant way, just as in my energy, I feel good. Yeah. I feel like me, I'm happy, right? As my happiness thermometer rises. Oh no. I mean, I actually heard something recently about, I'll be careful what I say, but like I heard something recently and I was like, really? Like, who was, and it was just desperate. These people were desperate to find like a chink in my armor. Well, that can't be going that well, can it? Or that can't be going. You're like, what? Like, who's got the time? Who's got the time to kind of try and find something wrong with me? But it's nothing to do with me. It's nothing. It used to really hurt me. I had a couple that I didn't see coming. I'm sure you've had the same, you know, that you think. Yeah. And it's really hurtful with friends because it's one thing with partners, because sometimes you expect, not rightly or wrongly, but if something happens with our relationship, we go to our friends, you know? And so if we feel like our relationship's a bit rocky, we probably confide in our friends. And in anything that's happening, we tell our friends probably more sometimes than a partner or a relationship, especially in the early stages of dating. So then when a friend betrays you, that betrayal is so deep. And it can be so deceitful. And I think really, really hard to repair from, actually. So I guess all I can say is being 43, nearly 44, is I have got okay with. In fact, the best piece of advice I saw, and it was something on Instagram, I'm going to like get this a bit wrong, but it was basically like, if I hadn't moved them out of your way like that, you would have kept trying to save it. And I just thought, wow. Like, and it's that whole thing about you don't know what you're being saved from. And I was actually thinking about this today because I knew we were recording. Mm-hmm. So there was someone that I was good friends with and I had a bit of a, you know, you start getting a bit of a, well, that was a bit weird, but you know, we're really good friends and I really hope not. And I really love this person.
But
and
you feel it.
I was just a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of an awareness. And we were recording something because I was going to help them out for something. And I'm quite spooky. I'm quite woo-woo. Yeah. And the recording wouldn't work. As in, like, it was just this, like, white noise on the recording the whole time, right? Weird. Usual platform, like, we're using everything. Nothing going on. No, like, storms or issues. Could not be used. Couldn't pick a single word out of it. And I remember thinking, you've got my back here. Like, okay, literally. This is interesting. Yeah.
And what you just said too, that is so crazy. I'm very woo-woo as well. But I'm like Googling, like, oh, I saw this color bird. What does it mean?
Yeah. You know? Yes. You're like, signs are,
yep. I'm like, signs are everywhere. I saw a red bird. But you made me think, too, that quote that you referenced as well. I am getting this from, you know, the first bit of us talking, but I'm the type of person, like, I probably never would have let that fade out. Like, I have, good intentions, and I always want to help people, even if I feel a weird energy towards me in that friendship. And if the universe or God didn't, like, fade that out for me, I wouldn't have. And it's kind of, like, just making peace with that. Like, okay, I get it. That's okay.
You know something I don't. That's what I think now. Like, I do my full moon list every month, you know, when the full moon comes. And on the top of the list, because you'll know the full moon we release, and at the top of the list, every single time I write, you know, please release any relationships not aligned with my highest good. And every time, sometimes it takes 1 hour, that's the quickest. Sometimes it's like overnight. There's a text, there's a message, there's some kind of weird thing that happens. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, usually, again, I had maybe a hint or an idea. Sometimes it's a client. And you're like, oh, God, I was really, that was some good money coming in. And then you find out that they've gone bust and you would have done the work and not been paid or something like that. Or a big, massive piece of work drops in. And if you'd said yes to that, you couldn't do the other thing. So just to sort of, the way that I've made peace with these things happening seemingly unexpectedly is that I'm being saved from something. I don't know the greater plan, and just kind of, I manage now. It doesn't mean I don't get upset. It doesn't mean that I don't still feel feelings, but I know that I will find out in the fullness of time the reason why, and I'm okay with that.
Totally. And I also think, like, even if you're not super close friends or in that relationship anymore or whatever, I think you can love people and wish them well from afar, you know? Like,
totally.
Even if people are like, you know, not getting what I'm doing with the podcast, like, that's fine. Like, it's just not for them. But, like, I still wish them well. And, you know, if I triggered something in them that they couldn't handle, like, you know, I hope they're doing okay. And it's just having that mindset shift, because it is hurtful. You're like, oh, God, did I say something weird? Or, like, was it some, I didn't text them the right way? And, like, I've just let all of that go in my life. I'm like, if I can't just, like, talk the way I talk, like, and be me, like, that relationship isn't serving me. Because
totally. The only nuance I would offer is that there are sometimes people just don't want to, and there's something, like, shady going on. And there are sometimes people can't, but both ways you'll find out in the fullness of time. So sometimes people are going through stuff and they feel unable to tell you, and maybe shame's involved. You know, so I've certainly had people kind of come back round and they felt they couldn't say that their marriage was in trouble, or they couldn't say that at the time, I don't know, they'd lost their job or whatever it might be, you know. So yeah, I would nuance it that just check in on the friends that just can't and the friends that won't. It's two different 100%. Things.
That's a really good point. That's, I had something similar to, like, someone reach out and be like, I'm sorry, I've been quiet for like a few months. And I honestly just said, like, I hope you know, like, I'm not taking it personally, because I know we're all just doing what's best for us in that moment, you know? So I agree with you in that. Like, there's a difference there. Oh, I love talking to you. I'm like, there's so much more I want to cover.
You should do a spooky margarita based, live in Nashville.
Yeah, that would be so fun. If you have time, that would be really fun. Right, we should do it.
It's an event.
Yay. They have a lot of good places for margs here, so I'll look up the best one. Do they make them in the UK? We'll take a little intermission, guys, for my quick question. But in the UK, is it common to have, like, spicy margs with, like, a salt rim? Yeah.
Yeah. No, tahine is, like, we'll have either, but tahine is, like, my favorite thing. I put tahine on eggs. Like, I bloody love that stuff.
It's so good. I'm like, I always ask for that with my marg, so we will do that. I know we talked about trusting the path of the universe and just, like, knowing that your timeline is truly yours, because that's something I've been dealing with. Just, I know I mentioned I'm in my mid to late 30s now. My birthday was 2 weeks ago. I'm like, I feel like once you reach that point that you're like, all my friends are married, all my friends have kids, like, trusting that timeline and simultaneously, like, tapping into your purpose and what you're meant to do here. I know that this is sort of a very broad question, but when you were considering, you know, and I don't know what it took for you to like eventually leave corporate and go out on your own, but when you were considering like really following what in your soul was telling you to do, what did that look like? Like, again, I know there's no how to, there's no guide, but like, was it a gut feeling? And like, if there are people that are listening that are a little bit stuck and they're like, I don't, you know, yeah, that sounds great, guys. Like, you both know what you want to do, but like, where does that leave me? Like, is there something we could tell people that they could try and tap into and to help them find their purpose and true passion?
I mean, I really do believe that in some way, what, you know, purpose has been defined as a cause greater than yourself and in connection with others, like like-minded community. I really do believe that. You know, we've talked about this. If I, you know, I'm doing this not for me, I get to go along on the ride, you know, but I'm doing this because I believe what I'm doing is important and will help people. And I really believe that. And whatever you're doing, you're inventing something, you're making a product, you're creating a beautiful piece of clothing that is going to bring, that's just exquisite. You're an artist, you know, whatever it is that you're doing and being connected to people that are like-minded. And by that, it doesn't have to be the same, again, the same exact thing you're doing, but you have that shared sense of values. When I was in corporate, I had a massive burnout when I was 29, like huge. And I tried everything to not acknowledge it. So, you know, I would talk about this a lot, but I went for every kind of test you could imagine. And I wasn't in wishing it would be like, oh, you're intolerant to gluten. Just, you know, take that out your diet and you'll be absolutely fine. You can keep killing yourself in this relentless bloody job and everything else. You can keep all the bits that you needed, you know, all the stuff that went with it, like the right car and, you know, car on the drive and the Range Rover and the house with the right postcode in London and all this sort of stuff and the holidays. And I wasn't intolerant to gluten. I was intolerant to my life. And I had to face that truth. And I didn't want to for a long time. And then after that, I had to face the truth that my marriage was also deeply out of alignment with me and my life. And I've been the person listening to this going, but what the fuck does that mean? And I didn't know either. And I have, what I can say is, I have never been more anxious in my life, such chronic anxiety, as the lead up to asking to leave my marriage, saying I wanted a divorce. And as soon as I did that, as soon as the cat was out of the bag, so to speak, there were obviously still huge challenges, but I never felt that anxiety again. It was the anxiety has been defined as an inability to be in the present moment. And for me, what it looked like was just scouring over every eventuality. But what about this? But what about that? Well, where will you live? Well, how will that work? And how will it work with your daughter? And what will this be like? And you don't have any family. And so what will that look like? And then how will you ever find love again? Or what did it, you know, just like you name it, going through every possible scenario, along with a good bit of raking over the past. Like, what if that had been different? Or what if that had changed? Or why did you turn left rather than right? Again, anxiety. Yep. And all I can say is that I know what it's like. And that means that you're, that feeling is horrendous, so isolating, so just all embodying. And it won't go away until you do something. And I'm not saying you have to do exactly what I did. That was right for me. And believe me, I took my time. And when I did, I had explored every avenue I had been to, every conceivable course, therapist, book, everything that I felt confident that I would never be able to, in my marriage, be happy in that relationship. And I'm still confident that that was absolutely the right choice. But it took me to take a step away, you know, away from the job I was doing that was killing me, away from that relationship. And then, hey, guess what? Like, the answer's not there. You just begin on a new path. But that's a path without that anxiety, because as soon as that choice has been made, whatever the choice is, even if the choice is that your day-to-day doesn't look any different, the choice is simply, I'm going to start exploring other careers. I'm going to start looking at courses that make me feel interested. I'm going to start a dance class because I used to really enjoy dancing, and maybe I'll meet some like-minded people there because I'm feeling really isolated and lonely. Like, that can just be the first step. It doesn't have to be this monumental like jump off point. But I just want to say to people that are in this place of this horrific anxiety that you're trying to manage a situation that doesn't yet exist and may never come. Most of those thoughts that I had, most of those fears, I still live in my house 5 years later. My daughters and I are still here. I've still got a car on the drive. Have there been struggles? My God, there have been struggles, but I've made it work, sometimes by the skin of my teeth, you know, and now there are different kinds of struggles, but that whole thing, you're going to pray for the life, you know, I prayed for these struggles and this exhaustion. So I try and keep myself in a place of gratitude. And guess what? There'll be new ones next year, but I will never be back in that place again. And that's not to do with my ex-husband, nothing he's done. It's to do with, I now know that it was that anxiety and that sort of trying to solve a problem with my mind that could only be solved with an action.
Yes. Yeah. And you made me think of too, and I'm going to butcher it, guys. I'm going to find the quote though. It's really good. But I think it's something like, once you start, you made me think of this. Once you start on the way and take the action, like the way reveals itself. Like totally. I butchered it, but it's like, it's so true. Like even starting the podcast a year ago, and I've said this before, but I had no idea what I was doing. I'm not technologically good at any of this. Like I just had this feeling. I was like, I'm just going to start. And it just, and I'm just going to ask if you experience this, like it's made me, even if like I don't have all these listeners yet, I know I will when I'm meant to, and it'll resonate with who it's meant to, and that's what it's about for me. It's made me feel more in tune with who I am and who I'm meant to be. And like that practice of taking action, like you said, like maybe you did one thing differently and you took one course, like you'll become more in tune with who you are and what you enjoy and what brings you joy. And you'll find the people, like you said, you're meant to find. So yeah, totally. I couldn't agree more. I wanted to ask you this. I'm always very curious how people that I look up to and I consider like a mentor, even if I haven't met them yet, now I've met you, but where you get your inspiration from. And I know it can be a lot of different things, but whether it's in those daily messages or it's in the book or it's in your day-to-day life, where do you get the inspiration from? What inspires you the most?
I think at the moment, probably my clients. So probably the conversations that I'm having with people. You know, there's what I do when I'm working with people one-to-one is EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. That's kind of the technique and the protocol that I follow. But, you know, I've got years of coaching and other methodologies behind me. And as I understand it, I think my blend of work is very unique. So just the incredible, I don't really want to use the word resilience because I don't think it does it any justice. But when you understand what people have been carrying, the load they've been carrying, and not only the load and what they've been doing, but this belief about themselves just isn't true, the lie that Shane had told them. And to think, and I see these beautiful people and beautiful souls, the people that come to me do want to, you know, they're trying to, I don't want to say get better. They are trying to heal. They are doing the stuff. You know, they don't want to hurt other people and they're struggling. And I just think it's so brave because you're going to come and sit with me and unpack horrors most of the time, you know, and no one gets to win trauma. I always say it's not like the Hunger Games. No one gets to go, I've got the worst trauma. Like no one gets it. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because our bodies and our systems don't differentiate between the most awful assaults that I talked about earlier to, you know, so I'm saying something to you, our bodies can react in the same way in a hostile conversation. It's no one gets to win, but it's this broken belief that we then see the world through. And I sit with all these beautiful people and I hear their stories and I hear what they've been doing. And then I get to very fortunately witness them kind of transitioning through what we're doing together and see them. I've actually got dinner with someone tomorrow and that I've worked with, and the retreat, that was probably the most inspirational thing that I've done recently. I led a retreat in November. We're now speaking early Feb. I've got another one in March, probably another couple actually later in the year.
Yeah, and I want to come to one.
You must. It's the most beautiful place. And also just the conversations that people had. And there's something in when you get shame out so early in a group, the conversations we were having, the friendships that have been formed, because guess what? There is no mask, literally none. Like yeah. everyone showed up, everyone got emotional, everyone got their stuff out yeah. safely. And the conversations you then have when we're not like, oh, so tell me, what do you do for work? Like, you know, it's like, fine, yeah. tell me about your work, but really tell me about you. Because yeah. we've just done some like really deep excavation here and we've we're held each that. Other. And we desperately want to see each other win like so much, so much. And I think, you know, we were talking about earlier, when you've got people close to you that don't want to see you win, it's devastating, like really is. And then to be in a group situation where every single pair of eyes is just, and hearts and souls is just there wanting you to be the best version of you, the softest version of you, the most powerful version of you, the most joyful version of you. If you're emotional, holding it with you and wanting you to let all of that out, like, it's just incredible. So I'd say for me, that was one of the biggest pieces of inspiration that I've had recently.
I love that, because that's like true bravery. I'd imagine most of these people don't know each other. You know,
not at all. There was one mother-daughter. That was it. And that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
That's really tough. I'm thinking about that now. I'm like, wow, that would be beautiful, but that's tough.
Yeah, it really was. But like I said, I mean, the friendships, the connections, the continuation for, you know, we've got people coming from the States to go and stay with someone in the UK and vice versa. And yeah, it's just amazing. And I think I've done so many group sessions before. I've worked in executive coaching for so long and done team sessions, and I love watching group dynamics unfold, because everyone really wants the same thing. We want real connection. I think a lot of us can feel quite lonely in our existing relationships. I think a lot of us have learned to, in some way, shape or form, perform in our systems, and that's not being Machiavelli. It's because we've learned a role that means there's less conflict, or we've learned a role that seems to make someone else happier, or we've learned a role that people seem to like us better when we're like this. And it's so liberating to be in a situation where you get to kind of start again and turn up however you want to. And also people looking at you going, you look so yourself today, and I've known you for 3 days. And it's like, wow, yeah.
I love that. And I went on one, it was in 2020, right before the world shut down. I did a yoga retreat in Colombia, Cartagena.
Oh,
it was beautiful. And it was one of the trainers from the gym I was going to at the time. So I knew like one person, and a friend came. So I wasn't fully alone. But aside from that, like the other 14 or so people, like to your point, at the end, we were just all so close, crying, being there for each other, wanting the best. So I think, I mean, that's a testament to what you've built too, that people feel safe in that space. So thank you for sharing that. I think everyone should go on a retreat with strangers, because I agree. The most beautiful thing you can do.
I agree. And especially if you're in a place where there is something emerging for you and maybe you haven't felt able to name it, you know, let's name an obvious one, like divorce or leaving a relationship, but also perhaps changing a career or feeling isolated in friendship groups, perhaps feeling like you don't belong in a certain situation or dynamic. Going to a place where you don't know anybody, you're really able to try that on and feel what that might be like for you, and share it and just be really witnessed as you are now.
Yeah, it's so true. I think it's like, stepping out of your comfort zone is so scary, but it's so worth it. Like I tell everyone that. I'm like, you know, putting yourself in those rooms that, you know, I'm trying to think of an example here. I write songs still, like in my spare time with the podcast. So getting into rooms with people you don't know, and you're like talking about this breakup from 10 years ago that still like lingers in the background, you know, and it's like being able to say those things out loud, it's scary. But then I feel like it's just you reach that next level, like you said, and you're just building a deeper bond with those people. I love that. And thank you again. I really appreciate your time and all that you've shared here. I think we've covered a lot of what I wanted to ask you. I have a couple more, but one that I was really excited to hear your take on. I know you've done a lot of work and you have led webinars and seminars on self-love and acceptance and that. And self-love has become like the overarching theme of this podcast through my own healing journey that I'm still on. What does, and I know, again, this is a kind of broad and tough question to ask, but what does self-love mean to you? And also, how do you know you're loving yourself well?
So self-love to me means not doing what I think I should, in inverted commas. Mm. So if I'm really loving myself, I am prioritizing my needs over other people's shoulds. Now, it doesn't make me, I'm not being selfish, and I want to give that differentiation because actually I think this is helpful. A lot to give people like, oh, I can't do that because it means I can't, you've just met my daughter. You know, yeah. Oh, she's going to go to bed 10 minutes late tonight. Like, oh, sorry, mummy. No. Like, right, well, here's the thing. Like, yeah. Sorry, mummy, you know, whatever. Like, people could be like, oh, God, what about mother? Like, oh, I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't, you know, whatever it might be. Like, I'm having an enriching conversation with you. Just met her. She's as happy as can be. Like,
yeah, she's you know, adorable. It's,
but the should might be, you know, I'm desperate for a massage. But I should do this extra hour of work, or I should do this, or I should do that, or I should do this thing, or I know what I need. I think we all know what we need. But we have this thought in our head that we're selfish. Now, being selfish, to give everyone a clear distinction, is when you are acting in your own self-interest at the detriment of someone else. So what you're doing is actively harming, unknowingly harming another person for your own gains. Yeah. Okay, it's being selfish. Self-care is when I'm acting to nurture my own needs so that I am better able to care for someone else. So if I know that by me having a massage one night this week with gorgeous Carly comes around here and we love her, and Amber actually always says the first 10 minutes, my daughter now, she loves it. classic Taurus moon, bloody loves it. She's straight on there like, mummy, can I have the first 15 minutes? And then, you know what, she'll go up to bed and then I'll follow after. And I've had 45 minutes, she's had 15. I feel like a new person. I sleep so well. We have more beautiful conversations. That to me is self-care. It's not selfish. And, you know, carving out time for exercise because it makes me, you know, less of a grumpy witch if I do exercise. Like,
same.
Right. And it's for my mind more than my body in this age now, maybe keep my injury free. But like, you know, if I don't do that, which sometimes means, again, me doing an online class and she's perhaps having to read a book or entertain herself for an hour, heaven forbid, that doesn't make me selfish. No. It means that my body moves freely and my mind is clear and I've done that thing for me and then I'm completely present for her. So I just want to offer that because I think that we get caught up in like what self-love is. And then how do I know? I want to answer that. I know I'm loving myself when I'm not afraid of being with myself. Like, I crave my own company now and I used to do everything to avoid it. And when I say avoid it, you could have looked at me and you could have seen me on the sofa over there and I would have had the candles on and I've got a lovely glass of Chardonnay and blah, 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 blah. But I would have been doing something else. And actually, that's when I used to self-harm. I used to scratch my face the most then because I actually didn't know how to be alone with myself. So my thoughts would be racing, the anxiety would be racing, the doom scrolling whilst watching something on Netflix, whilst doing this, whilst doing that, it was never present. I was afraid of being with me. I had a guy reach out this week on one of my followers, and he was like, I want to ask you, like, you know, I broke up 8 months ago, she cheated on me a lot, you know, I'm doing everything I can, but I'm just feeling this, I'm feeling that, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, like, what do you advise? I'm like, you have to stop resisting yourself. You have to stop. Like, you're not you may be over it, you may not be, but you've just got to stop this seesaw, this relentlessness of fighting all of these juxtaposing thoughts. You just have to stop being afraid of yourself. You've got to just sit with it. And you know what? As soon as I did that, it actually wasn't that scary. I didn't fall very far. When I got to what I now call my benchmark, I love it and I crave it and I go back there very often and I now have a beautiful relationship and he's amazing and he's absolutely the love of my life and it's incredible.
I love that.
Thank you, but I'm not afraid
of
being
inspiring.
Thank you, but I'm not afraid of being by myself anymore. And I've chosen from a different place.
Yeah, I think you made me think of that too because I think I'm getting closer, but I know I still have work to do. But it's even like, you know, having my breakfast this morning and not looking at my phone and like being present with a beautiful meal I made for myself, you know, like those things and just sitting with it. And like you said, like those racing thoughts, like the more you're in stillness and you give yourself that space to just feel them, like they start to float away. And I think we're all, you know, we're all just so focused on, and there's so many distractions, so I'm not taking it away. There's social media, all these things that we, you know, can just sadly distract our minds and get us out of our own intuition and inside of our own thoughts and everything like that. So thank you. That was beautiful. And I think
you're very welcome. A very good practical, because I think it's great to say these things, but a practical takeaway for your listeners. The way I started doing some of this, I used to go out for a walk with AirPods in my ears with nothing on. So it was like, yeah, it's a good one. So like no one knows you're not listening to music, but you're not. And at the start of it, you're like, this is really weird. But no one knows, okay? And then you get to the point where you're like, oh, that's really nice. I'm noticing things. I'm looking around. And then you can end up extending that to a coffee shop where, again, maybe you've still got the AirPods in, but you're sat there and you're not scrolling and you could be listening to, you know, Resand or any of those, like, horny fairy books or whatever it might be, you know, that you're not. You're just sat there and you're just being present, but no one needs to know. And then you can build up that muscle. And that's how I started doing it. I started going for walks with AirPods in and not listening to anything and building up that muscle of being okay with being alone with myself.
I love that. That's great. I'll be taking that advice. So I hope everyone else does too. Thank you again for your time. My last question that I like to end with, I'm sure you have a bunch, but if there's a quote, a piece of advice, anything you'd like to leave the listeners with that's made an impact on you, I would love to hear that.
My favorite that I use a lot that I think is a beautiful way of talking about shame. I might get this slightly wrong. Apologies, everyone. It's Carl Jung. And he says, it's the real courage. It's a man to keep his shadow out in front so that it can never take you down from behind. So the idea obviously is to face your shadow, because then it can, you know, and keep it out in front of you, because then it can never take you down from behind. And to me, that's shame. Like, let's just get it dealt with. Let's get it all out into the light, because then it can never, ever, like me, then you're just shame free and it can never get hold of you.
I love that so much. Thank you, Annalie. This has been so inspiring. I'm sure it's going to inspire a lot of people that are able to listen. But from the bottom of my heart, I know that you did not have to come on. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm very, very honored to be on. And I'm excited for our spooky margarita book tour event.
This is going to be so fun. I will send you guys the details when we do that. That'll be a blast. And I will tag you in the notes and everything, but can you tell everyone where to find you and the title of the book so they can go pre-save it and everything?
Thank you so much. Yeah, the best place to find me and 300,000 other fun people is an Instagram that's Annalie Howling. There is a TikTok, but I'm too old to use it, so forgive me, it's not updated very often, which is at Annalie Howling. YouTube, there's actually a couple of free masterclasses on there, particularly with the inner critic, that's the same, Annalie Howling. And the book, she actually looks like a spell book. I've asked specifically for Unapologetic. It is a black book with metallic. It looks like a spell book. That was a design brief. there's the inside page is a leopard print. It's just so beautiful. But yeah, Unapologetic, Unshackle Your Shame, Reclaim Your Power. And it's out on the 13th of May. But please pre-order it. It changes my life. I'm happy to beg and be thirsty about this. Like, pre-order changes my life. So please do that.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you so much, Annalie. And we'll talk to you guys next time. As always, I'm sending you all of the love and light in the world. We'll see you soon.